Looking for a new home should be exciting, not frustrating. That's why Homes.com might just be the best home shopping site out there. Imagine searching for your dream home without ads cluttering your view. Homes.com's sleek, beautifully designed, ad-free interface makes your search simple and distraction-free. And if you're a parent, you know how important school information is. Homes.com gets it. They're the only site with detailed school and district info from multiple sources, including reviews from Niche. Plus, they've got a super comprehensive and transparent agent directory, making it easy to find the right expert to guide your journey. Oh, and here's a game changer. Homes.com always connects you directly with a listing agent who knows the home best. They even go beyond the basics, offering the most in-depth neighborhood content of any home shopping site, packed with details to help you find a community that feels like home. And the search tools? Unmatched. With 22 data visualization layers, 7 environmental layers, and filters for commute times and architectural styles, Homes.com truly is the home search you've been searching for. Go to Homes.com. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Oh, such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, a Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 45% off select styles and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 45% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
We coming to H-Town. Let's get to work in, man. Let's go.
Great day. Great day. Oh, give me some juice, baby.
Oh, yeah.
One more knee will do it at the Houston 14-yard line. 40 seconds to go. Mahomes gets under center, takes a knee. It is over at Arrowhead Stadium. The Houston Texans fall to the Kansas City Chiefs 27-19. So the Texans lose to Kansas City and look forward to Christmas Day in just a few days to take on the Baltimore Ravens. A costly day as far as injuries go, and the Texans take the L along the way, dropping their record to 9-6.
Yeah, that Mark hit it. That was Mark Vandermeer on the call. He hit it on that last part there. Welcome in, everybody, on a Reaction Monday. Hope you had a great weekend other than that game. Christmas just a couple of days away, as we welcome you in on a Monday, a Reaction Monday to Payne and Pendergast, Sean Pendergast alongside Seth Payne. And Seth, at the end of that day, I didn't even care what the final score was. I think the Texans, in terms of what it sounded like all week, they were looking to accomplish in terms of the game itself, I feel like they did. It sounded like all week the goal was just to see how they stood in with the Chiefs, and they did stand in with the Chiefs. They had a possession with 5 minutes to go, with a chance to tie the game. And as most of the second half went, they didn't do that. But I didn't even care about the final score. The Tank Dell injury looms, over everything.
The Tank Dell injury especially, because in the first half, it felt like, oh, okay, they're doing some things. It wasn't like they were a rolling ball of death or anything, but they were connecting with Tank Dell. I think because of the injuries in the secondary, Spagnuolo wanted to play a little bit more zone than he typically does, and they took advantage of it. The Texans totally took advantage of it, and including on that pass to Dell, that was a great play. And then you get into the second half, and they're able to blitz deeper into the second half. Yeah. The Chiefs were able to blitz. Texans can't handle it, and really the sum total of it is you look at the difference between the Chiefs and the Texans. With or without their best players, man, you get into the fourth quarter, you get down in the red zone, it's first and goal on the 10, and somehow it ends up third and 20. And you just, you can't live that way. You can't be taking delay of games. You can't be running out of bounds for a five-yard loss when you could just throw the ball away. All these little details, and then the other big difference is just the negative run plays, the negative plays in general.
About the screens,
because the screens, yeah, the wide receiver screens were like a run play. The Chiefs aren't starting out second and 10, second and 12 nearly as often as the Texans are.
Nope,
and so they're worlds apart in terms of their entire operation offensively.
That is a clean operation over there, man. I don't care what the numbers say, and you cited these numbers quite a bit last week, appropriately so, that, hey, you know, offensively, these are two very similar teams this year in terms of output. You watch that game, you go, no, these are two very dissimilar teams in terms of knowing what needs to get done in order to move the football, score points, and win games.
And the wide receiver screens are just that's a rolling ball of delight is what that is.
For the other team, it's a rolling ball of pastries for the Chiefs.
Here the other go. Man, and it's a quick turnaround. So today's like normal Friday.
Yeah, right. They play in two
everybody.
Days.
So did you flush that one? The Texans have no choice but to flush it. The other, but then the injuries are the other big part of that game. The biggest, most devastating thing emotionally, obviously, is Tank. And who, again, did he have six receptions?
See, the last reception was his sixth reception for 98 yards.
Which I believe ties his season high for receptions.
Six or seven. So he had one other big game this season. Yeah. I think it was when Nico was out. Yeah, was it the Jets?
Yeah,
he had a big game against the Jets.
Yep. So he had matched his production through just early into the third quarter. And
that was the Tank from last year.
That was
the Tank from last year.
There's the Steelers and Ravens game, since that's relevant as well. I think in looking at the Steelers in that Ravens game, I know if all you did was look at the final score, you think, oh, the Ravens just destroyed the Steelers. That was a very close game, and it went back and forth. The beginning of the fourth quarter was crazy.
See, it was crazy.
Multiple turnovers.
It was crazy. And similar to the Texans, the Steelers had the ball with just a few minutes to go in the game, and Russ throws a pick six.
It ends up coming down to, okay, who's the better quarterback in this game? But what I would say about the Steelers was, man, the Steelers were rolling a lot of times with Ben Skoranek, Pruitt, this is like their fourth string tight end.
Who was in Texans camp
this year. Oh, my gosh, Sean. I mean,
Skoranek would be their second best wide receiver
like
right now.
Van Jefferson caught a touchdown. Kelvin Austin was a huge factor in this game. They're doing more with less. And if I come out of that game and I'm a Steelers fan, there's no George Pickens. Hey, I know George Pickens is coming back. I would actually feel like, all right, we've still got a puncher's chance.
Just don't throw a pick
in the playoffs.
Six. They're on the road, you know.
Yeah,
they're still leading the division, by the way.
Yeah, that's right.
The Steelers are. They got the tiebreaker.
So the Ravens have something to play for.
Yes,
but also just, man, there's a difference in conjuring up the optimism for the Steelers compared to the Texans.
No doubt.
And I don't know who the Texans rest this. You want to rest people? Who?
Yeah.
I don't know who you rest.
You're bringing
There's nobody
up.
Left.
No. They are banged up. And if Tank Dell hadn't gotten hurt, we'd be talking about Jimmy Ward today. You know, Jimmy Ward got hurt. They're all out for this game.
Shaq Mason. Yeah, this short week. The worst possible outcome for this short week was all the injuries.
So the Tank is the big one. That's the one that, I mean, obviously just the optics of it that hit the emotional cord, particularly with C.J. Stroud. Here was Ian Rapoport yesterday on the NFL Network with the update on Tank Dell.
One of the scarier injuries we have seen Tank Dell with that acrobatic touchdown catch. Comes down a little friendly fire from his teammate. You could see obvious pain dealing with a knee injury. And my understanding is this is a dislocated kneecap for Tank Dell, which is why you could see teammates immediately say, don't move, because the kneecap was, frankly, not where it was supposed to be. And if you move your leg, if you bend it, you can do serious damage. Tank Dell was transported immediately to University of Kansas Medical Center to stay overnight. That is where he remained, mostly as a precaution, wanted to make sure he had the best care possible, taking him to a trauma one center, a tier one center. That is where he remains. He has not had surgery yet, to my knowledge. It is still possible, but it has not happened yet. It is unclear when Tank Dell will be able to return to the field. He is, safe to say right now, out indefinitely, So the Houston Texans will be moving forward without one of their star receivers.
Okay, so we should make it clear. That report was from yesterday morning. Tank is back in Houston now.
Yeah.
He's back in Houston now. They are still, the rest of that report all holds up because they are still, I think, determining, you know, the damage, the full extent of the damage, what the next steps are. I don't want to speculate recklessly.
I don't want to speculate
like
at all.
Yeah,
I mean, if it was, I wouldn't want to say just, but air quotes, just a dislocated kneecap. That's a better prognosis. But obviously, sometimes the dislocated kneecap is part of a lot of other stuff that could go on. And I will. I honestly, the fact that Tank held on to that ball when he like very clearly knew that something was wrong right away. A tip of the cap to him for that.
Yeah.
I was on the field once when. I was on the sideline when Fred Taylor is a tough dude. He's really tough. I know he got injured a lot, but he's a tough dude. He tore his groin in the middle of a play when he went to go make a cut and threw the ball to the ground. He like kind of just like, he was like,
really?
You can see where it tore, and he just like threw it like, get it away from me.
Okay.
You caused me so much pain.
Okay.
So like that's Fred's not, you know, Fred is not soft whatsoever. It's just like in that, sometimes with those really traumatic things, your brain just goes to mush.
Oh, yeah.
Tip of the cap for that. Obviously, that doesn't matter at the end of the day. But it could be any number of things right now. So from something that might just be a few weeks in rehab if all it were was a dislocated kneecap. But it feels like, you know, D'Amico yesterday called it a significant injury.
CJ was actually asked about Tank holding on to the football. This is like the eighth question of the press conference after what was clearly an emotional press conference for CJ Stroud.
I guess. It's not, don't overthink it. It's the least of all worry, you know what I'm saying? So, don't worry about it. It's okay.
So, wait, what did he ask?
I think he asked just about what he thought about Tank holding onto the ball going to the ground. And if you watch the whole press conference, like it was a grind for CJ going through that press conference. All the questions were about Tank. We saw CJ on the field, and you get to all these questions about his best friend possibly missing, you know, definitely missing this year, maybe missing now. Who knows? And then you get to, what do you think of him holding onto the football? CJ's like, you know, I can see in his mind, like, we lost the game. Didn't really matter, you know?
Yeah, I don't know. I know some people thought that that question was out of line. I didn't, like, I thought it was.
I definitely didn't think it was out of line. And I don't think CJ was out of line either, you know, answering it. You know, like, it's just, he's answering it. Here's CJ immediately, first thing in the press conference, being asked about Tank going down.
I mean, you know, all you can do is really pray, you know? So, at the end of the day, God still gets the glory, you know? I always, no matter what happens to me, you know, I always know that I'm even up here because of the grace of Jesus and the grace of who he is in my life and Tank's life. So for anything, how it goes, left or right or up or down, I always have to praise my Lord and Savior. You know, it's not easy, you know what I'm saying? But after that, you know, I try to use it as motivation, you know, and it's not easy to, you know, just let it go, you know, especially that's my best friend, you know what I mean? So not easy to move on and just keep playing, but I try to do as best as I could. And my teammates helped me up, you know, Joe helped me up, Dalton, you know, so I appreciate those guys just talking to me because, you know, I was going through it. So I appreciate them just, you know, being there for me.
That was after that answer started after what was probably, it felt like 10-second pause when he was asked that. You can tell, if you watch the video, to the very beginning of the press conference, CJ was really having to kind of, I think, gather himself, think of what the right words were. But that was a tough scene on the field, man. That was tough watching
it was,
CJ
and
whatnot.
You know, and I think, obviously CJ was very emotional afterwards. And that was polarizing to a lot of people.
It was. The only thing I would say about that is CJ was doing some things after that were uncharacteristic of him.
Yeah.
With the delay of game penalties.
Yeah.
Running out of bounds, 5 yards behind the line of scrimmage.
Yeah.
You know, so there were things where you could carve together a narrative that he maybe was still like emotionally distracted.
There was some kind of funk or something.
This just in, they've been in a funk in the second half all season
long.
I
would prefer, because you just have no idea, you know, exactly how that affects everything. I think there is something, like, I'm not over the top criticizing anybody for anything or what have you, but like there is that element of, you know, bad things happen in a football game, and your leadership guys have to be, you know, ideally very stoic and forward-looking and all of that. And so it causes me concern just in that, like, I don't want to sound like a monster here, but there is a little bit of detaching yourself from normal human emotions when you're in the middle of something like that, that over time maybe is something that will change.
He's 23.
So I get it, you can't criticize people's emotional responses to any given thing. You never know exactly how you're going to respond. But it was a unique situation.
Yeah. It's a good way to put it. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you on a Reaction Monday.
Remember Jim Mattis, the general, he was the chief of the forces over there. He was telling us.
I don't.
He was the main guy over in the Gulf War, the most recent Gulf War.
Okay.
But I remember reading a story he was telling about in the first Gulf War in Desert Storm, how they're rocketing towards Baghdad. And they faced some kind of resistance, and like one of his best friends in the world was rocketing alongside him in a tank, and boom, the tank got what he thought was taken out, and he had to tell himself, like, all right, just focus, mission.
Yeah.
Like, that's an extreme example
of
everything, but that is the mode of, there's a certain, you got 52 other guys out there that are also under your responsibility.
It's a fair point. It's a fair point. All right, we're off and running on a Reaction Monday. We will certainly react more to the Texans. 713-572-4610. You want to hit us on the text page?
By the way, his buddy turned out all right.
Okay, good.
Mattis's buddy.
Happy ending.
Yeah.
All right.
And but spoiler alert, they took Baghdad.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Oh, thanks a lot. I was going to watch that on TV tonight. Yeah. All right. Let's circle over to the Astros for a minute. We'll get back to the Texans. But yet another big deal made on a Friday afternoon. It was a Kyle Tucker trade 2 weeks ago. This one makes me feel a whole lot more optimistic about the upcoming season. We'll talk about that.
But dude averages 18 yards after catch.
We get it. When you're passionate about something, you go all in. You live entirely in that world. That's exactly how Graybar is about renewable energy projects.
He's all fourth quarter, such a sleeper.
Join our league of clean energy at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that.
Yep.
No hassle.
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Head to Safeway this week for these amazing digital deals for members. Coca-Cola, 7-Up, Dr. Pepper, and Polar Seltzer, selected varieties and sizes, buy two and get three free of equal or lesser value, plus CRV. Limit three free items. USDA Choice Bone-In Ribeye Steak, $7.97 per pound. Limit two packages. Creamy Hass Avocados, 77 cents each. Limit four items. Visit Safeway.com for more details. See you in the aisles.
Hey, football fans, it's Patrick Peterson, former three-time All-Pro NFL cornerback, and now the new host of First and Pod, the podcast that breaks down every game, every week, with new episodes dropping every Monday and Friday mornings. Plus, I'll be highlighting key matchups for DBs around the league on Patrick's Corner. Be sure to subscribe to First and Pod on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Coming up next.
It's a Shoppers John Deere Reaction Monday on Sports Radio 610. Here's Payne and Pendergast.
That's a good point by the texter. This is not me kowtowing to one texter. I was thinking this during the break. I'm like, man, you know what? We'll hit this Christian Walker thing for about a minute, then we'll hit it again in headlines. Because the texter says, switching to Astros now is like being at your favorite cousin's funeral and having to congratulate your five-year-old nephew for graduating pre-K. I'm mourning over here. Scram, Astros. Good point. And I was feeling that during the break. I'm like, I don't know. We probably got to circle. There's still a ton to unpack from this Texans game. We will do that in a minute, but we should point out, because there may be people unaware of this or just didn't dig into it. The Astros made a big signing Christian Walker to a 3-year, $60 million deal. Makes me more optimistic about the upcoming season.
Yeah, it doesn't make you feel better about like the current state of the outfield or anything.
One signing away, Seth.
I think we're just, Alex Bregman, we've gone to his funeral, basically. Christian Walker was like your mom marrying your new dad at your dad's funeral. That was that nightmare funeral scenario.
With Isak Paredes as the best man.
Yes. Yeah, let's just kind of like, I'm sorry about your dad, but I'm going to be your new daddy.
By the way.
So, Christian Walker, welcome home, new daddy. Even though you're, first baseman as opposed to, you're a corner infield.
He's a good player, man. Three years, 60 mil.
And they're stacking up on pull hitters.
Pull hitters.
They want to assault the Crawford boxes.
Pull hitters,
week.
And they're going to be much better defensively at first base this year.
Yeah.
He's a gold glove caliber. He's a gold glover, literally a gold glover, not gold glove caliber. So that's good. And I think it proves, again, like Jim Crane willing to spend money on a 3-year deal.
Yeah.
On a 3-year deal. Now, it hurts that they're paying $40 million for the position of first base, $20 million to Christian Walker, and $19 million to Jose Abreu to do whatever the hell he's doing this year.
Well, I feel better about Christian Walker than if they'd traded for Arenado, I think. Yeah. Arenado's got a little of that Abreu in him.
He's in his declining mid-30s. Player.
He's been declining offensively. He's still good defensively. He would have been better than... he would have been good defensively, probably, but he's not the same guy.
Nope. All right, so the Texans, man, still a ton to unpack from this game. The frustration with Bobby Slowick is not dialing back. It is bubbling up. These screen passes to the wide receivers are drive killers, man. What are you doing? He threw... I went back, rewatched the game, went through the game log. The Texans threw 4 wide receiver screens in this game. 3 to Nico Collins, 1 to Robert Woods.
Mm-hmm.
None of them worked. They all went for negative yardage, that's really hard to do. I'm sorry, even like... To not have one of these plays a missed tackle where you at least get 4 yards. It's almost as hard to throw 4 wide receiver screens for a total of 60 yards as it is to throw 4 wide receiver screens for a total of negative 9 yards. Here's the worst part. The down and distance situations it leaves you in. The first one put them in second and 12, put them behind the chains.
And that was a bad throw by CJ, but also I don't know if it would have gone for anything anyway.
Yeah.
Because none of these guys can block.
None of them were blocked well.
They don't know how to block.
None of them were blocked well. First one put him in second and 12. The other 3 were all thrown on second down and long. And so the idea from Bobby Slowick was, this is the play that'll get us in third and manageable at the very least.
Right, just an easy 5 yards.
Easy 5 yards.
In theory.
Yeah.
Tunsil was lost in space. Like, Tunsil's a great pass protector. Not so much this last game, but... He's atrocious as a blocker. And out in space, he might as well be Kenyon Green out in space.
Which is crazy because he's a good athlete for his position. Those 3 plays put them in 3rd and 10, 3rd and 13, 3rd and 9.
Mm-hmm.
Let's skip to Mays, too, here, Connor. Robert Mays, who was with the Ringer. Who's he with now, Robert Mays? He's doing his own thing.
The Athletic, I think.
Yeah. That's right, The Athletic. On his podcast, he was talking about the screen game and how it's a big tell.
Yeah.
How well you execute your screen game is a tell as to how well coached you are offensively. Yeah. He made a comparison between the best screen game in the NFL and the worst screen game in the NFL.
The Bucs have positive 17.5 EPA on screens this year. Baker Mayfield does. That is the highest in the league. The Texans have negative 17.5. That is dead last in the NFL. So there is a 35-point difference between the best screen team and the worst screen team in the league. And the fact that it's the Bucs and the Texans feels so appropriate to me right now.
Well, that is basically a field goal swing a game between these two teams in just this one little... I mean, how many screens are you even calling a week? 3, 4? For those 3, 4 plays to be effectively a field goal swing between these two teams. And you feel it too. And this is how you get high-level offensive passing production out of an okay quarterback as opposed to a great quarterback feeling completely bogged down in the way that C.J. Stroud has been this year.
All Right, so that second voice was Derek Klassen, who's at QB Klassen. Yeah,
so the one positive I would take from it is that they had a screen to Joe Mixon that was set up by faking a screen, the wide receiver screen.
By the Chiefs getting thirsty over all the bad screens.
So at least there's some semblance of a plan there of like, all right, this is how we're going to offset the tendencies and everything else like that. There was one play, there was a high school coach that said, Seth, that one screen was an RPO. So I went back and watched it. And I usually, on the RPO stuff, I defer to the high school coaches initially because they know the RPO game a lot better.
Yeah.
But I watched that. Like, no, that was it was window dressing. It wasn't supposed to be an RPO. It was him throwing out to Nico. The offensive line was not blocking up like it was going to be an RPO. And it's really, really bad. They're just all very poorly executed. Even if it was an RPO, guess what? Don't run that damn RPO. Yeah. If like part of your RPO is a play that you're horrible at running because your guys can't block.
Right.
Well, this isn't related to the screens. It partially is, but it's tied to the run game and everything else. Sure. Dalton Schultz, man, he's an atrocity. I just like you can't run this system with Dalton Schultz as your tight end. You can't run this system the way they're trying to run it without a tight end who can't block. Your zone runs are just dead in the water because he's getting destroyed so routinely. So and then the screens. Defenses know when they're coming. Defenses know you're going to, hey, we're off. Okay, we got that motion in the backfield. I'm coming up, and I'm going to make the play. Like, it's so predictable. It's so poorly executed. All of these things where D'Amico and Bobby Slowick will talk about, hey, we're good when we execute. Right. You guys are not executing on 50% of your plays, and that comes back to coaching. Yes, it's the players on the field, but it's also the fact that guys are completely lost. It's a disjointed mess.
Yeah,
the execution is on the offensive coordinator.
Yes.
When nobody's executing anywhere, that's on the offensive coordinator.
Well, here's what's also on the offensive coordinator. Calling plays that work and staying away from plays that clearly your team can't run. Like, I posted all those the down and distance numbers and whatnot. I posted that in a tweet on Sunday. Saturday night. When I got home, I rewatched the game. Saturday night. I posted on Saturday night. And some of the replies from people were like, well, Nico should have done this on the play. Or, well, they should have done this. And I like, no, I get it. Like, when you call a play one time and it's not executed well, that's on the players.
Yeah.
When you call it four times in the first half of a game, that becomes on the offensive coordinator. It's clearly something your team is having trouble executing. Stop calling that play. When you get pulled over for drunk driving, that's on you, the drunk driver. If one of your parents or somebody then continues to put you behind the wheel drunk, that's on whoever keeps putting you behind the wheel drunk. You know what I mean? Like, it's the first one I'll allow, okay, the offensive coordinator called a play, guys couldn't execute it, to go back and keep banging on the button three times after that.
And
put your quarterback continually in these third and long situations on the road in Kansas City. Jeez.
The part of it, especially, it's almost like the thinking is, we're going to surprise him with something that, hey, Spagnuolo's a bad defensive or a really good defensive coordinator. He knows we're awful at the screens. His guys probably won't be worried about the screen because Spagnuolo's going to tell him not to worry about it.
Yeah.
I don't know. I have no idea. It's we're going to ambush him with the weakest thing that we do.
Yeah.
This offense is going to drive me insane. The way that they're wired as football players and the way they're operating, it's just so much night and day different than the way the defense operates.
It's crazy to me.
I mean,
it's they exist in the same building.
And it's gotten to the point now, too, where, look, Mixon's not always making the right reads and the run plays, but it's that snowball effect of, right, but because he's not really usually seeing the right picture anyway in front of him, so is he pressing too hard? And CJ needs to be held accountable for his multiple bad decisions in that game. But you get into that old conundrum of, okay, we know CJ's better than this, the way he's been playing since week 7. We know he should be better than that. You're not going to go out and try a new quarterback next year.
No.
But he's not. CJ's regressing under this current coaching staff.
Yep. So there's going to be, man, if this holds up, there's going to be some decisions to be made over there.
It shouldn't be a decision. That's the frustrating thing is it shouldn't be a decision. They got to get a new offensive coordinator next year.
Yep.
But we all know, none of us are expecting it. I don't know. I'm not expecting them to make a change, which is frustrating to me because he's clearly not the answer.
Well, the problem is the execution, I keep getting told. It's the players. It's the players not executing. That's what I keep hearing.
It's a pretty high paid. You just paid Dalton Schultz a new contract.
You just paid Bobby Slowick.
Yeah,
they gave Bobby Slowick a raise, reportedly. What do they do at wide receiver now? This is a situation they were in last year, so this is not a foreign situation. Tank going out for the season, unfortunately, is a 2-year annual tradition.
I will be surprised if the Texans didn't put a claim in on Deontay Johnson, who was let go by the Ravens after being suspended, basically because he chose not to play.
He pulled a Devondre Campbell.
Yeah. I think you're down at this time of the year. Nick's big on getting guys in the building and to see what happens, you know, when they get in the building. Put a claim in on Deontay Johnson. I'm guessing somebody else will snap him up. The waiver wire's today, so we'll find out. But you think about the Chiefs 2 years ago, they signed a head case, Kadarius Toney, at the end of the year. And for a short stretch of time, a head case can be on his best behavior. Now, Kadarius Toney went full Kadarius Toney the next year. But that doesn't concern us. It's what can you do over the next few weeks. I would just love to get Deontay Johnson in the building.
We'll find out. It leaks out. I mean, I don't know if the NFL reports it or if the insiders of the NFL report it, but typically when somebody gets claimed,
yeah,
it'll leak out there like these are the other teams that put claims in on him that didn't get him.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
The talk is that, now keep in mind, this is the Ravens that are cutting him loose. This is a team that is in the middle of a playoff. It's the Texans' opponent this week. At the very least, get him in the building and see if he was listening in class at all while he was there. You know what I mean? Like,
I'm guessing there's the low probability of, and he definitely wasn't too there the last few weeks.
I am too. I'm guessing, yeah. Deontay Johnson doesn't strike me as a pay attention and sit in the front row guy at all.
I stayed up at the office and sat in on coaches' meetings until 11 p.m.
Not that guy. But you're right. Like, you know, your desperate times call for desperate measures. I would put a claim in on Deontay Johnson. I don't know, man, some of the dudes that are on the street right now.
Like, Odell Beckham Jr.?
Yeah. Like, okay. I mean, I just said, I literally said a week ago when they put out odds on Odell Beckham Jr.'s new team after the Dolphins cut him before the Texans game. I'm like, why are they even putting this out? Like, why there will not be a new team for Odell Beckham Jr. And yet, I'm like, okay, is he better than Jared Wayne?
Playoff experience, big moment in the Super Bowl. Yeah.
I'm looking at the names like Hunter Renfro's out there.
Okay. Ooh.
Yeah, yeah.
Poor Hunter. There was a brief moment in time.
He got paid.
There.
He ain't that poor.
He got paid and then disappeared completely.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So Hunter Renfro's out there. Odell Beckham Jr. Neither of those guys known for their clean, crisp, the precision route running. You know, I know people are going to say, "Oh, I watched the highlights of Hunter." I'm talking like clean, precise, non-freelancing type stuff. So I think that what's the harm? Like, what are you, let's call up another practice squad guy that'll run the wrong route and land on one of your best receivers' legs. Yeah.
I do wonder, and I did not do this research because I just didn't have the time and it would bore me to tears, but this is what Nick Caserio and his staff are paid to do. I do wonder if out there on somebody's practice squad, there's a guy that they like or they scouted that they liked and they can pick. Now you pick him up, he's on the 53.
Yeah, you can sign anybody off anybody's practice squad.
Yeah, yeah. And they've got to agree to come here and you got to put him on the 53-man roster, but I wonder, they got to do something. Like, you cannot go into this stretch of the season with Jared Wayne as your fifth wide receiver. You just can't. And John Mechie's banged up.
Yeah.
He was limited. He was listed as limited yesterday. They didn't practice, but they had an injury report. We'll get into that in headlines. The injury report, I think, took a turn, other than the Tank Dell part, I think took a slight turn for the better for this game with a couple of names. So we'll get into that in the in headlines. Rockets win yesterday. We'll get into that. We'll dig a little more into the Christian Walker signing with the Astros. College football playoff this weekend. Busy weekend, man. We'll get into it in headlines coming up next.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines.
All right, let's get into today's headlines. Let's start with the Texans. They lose 27-19.
Oh.
I don't know if you know, Seth. They lost to the Chiefs.
I was trying to catch up during the break. I didn't
Saturday.
Get to the end yet.
Yeah, okay. Sorry, I spoiled it for you. They lost the game 27-19. Score could have been 42-0 for all I care. The big story out of this game is they lose Tank Dell, Jimmy Ward, Shaq Mason, all listed as out on the injury report for this week. The big thing we're waiting for with the Texans, I think maybe even more, for me at least, I don't know how other people feel, I'm waiting for this more than I am the results of the next two games. What is the prognosis for Tank Dell beyond just the dislocated kneecap?
Hopefully
that we know
it's
about.
Just a dislocated kneecap.
I don't care if they're 11-6 or 9-8 if there's long-term damage to Tank Dell.
So with a dislocated kneecap, having seen a couple in person, it's a pretty grotesque injury, and it does freak you out. When you see, you can see when you look at it, okay, the kneecap might be off on the side, but in your mind, all you're seeing is like his leg is turned the wrong way.
Yeah.
That's what it looks like.
Yep.
It's looking, but kind of like with a dislocated ankle, which is another grotesque injury, it doesn't always, it's not always as bad as it looks. So, yeah, maybe hopefully it's as simple as that, but we have no idea. Did you say there was good news?
Did I?
I thought you said there was good news on your injury front. Oh, no, you were talking about...
No. I did say there's good. I'll get to that. Okay. I did say, but I'm just listening to the guys
who are
out.
I was waiting to hear what it was.
Well, okay. John Metchie and Cade Stover are listed as limited on the practice report. They missed the game last week.
I knew that. I thought maybe I missed the Shaq Mason report or something.
No. But we should talk about that.
Shaq has been playing awesome, but...
No, and along those lines, so we've talked about Tank. We'll talk more about Tank in the 7 o'clock hour. That's a big story. Shaq Mason, Jimmy Ward, both out, and it sounds like are going to miss at least this game, obviously with a short turnaround. How do you think Kendrick Green did in Shaq's place?
Look, he had some rough snaps, but he also, the thing I like about him is that he's got a swarm mentality. There's a scrappiness to him.
He is a swarmer.
He's so undersized. I mean, at times he kind of gets batted around. but I admire that sometimes he's like, he's a guy that knows the battle is lost, but he'll fling his body into danger anyway. So it's not like he's a long-term solution or anything. But I'm not distraught over if he has to start, but it versus a team like the Ravens, it's got a really good run defense and very good interior defensive linemen. I don't think he's a solution. It's rough on the O-line right now.
What do they do if they get Juice Scruggs back? Juice Scruggs is empirically a better player than Kendrick Green.
Yeah.
More talented, at least. And they're at the stage now where I truly feel it's let's get our five best guys out there. Mm-hmm. I think that signal was sent when they moved Titus over to left guard and put Blake Fisher in. So if Juice comes back... The best five, right, would be, and Shaq's still out, I'm assuming.
I'm thinking, yeah, Juice at left guard and
Titus to right
back
guard.
To right tackle. Right guard.
To right guard. Yeah, you got to keep Blake Fisher in there. Right now.
Yeah.
That'd probably be it.
Yeah.
Jarrett Patterson stays at center. And then losing Jimmy Ward is a killer. I mean, I don't know what you're down to here.
Again, in the second half, okay, Kamari goes down and plays a slot. You got Okuda on the outside. Teams are going to start figuring out ways to
attack
that.
Yep. It's tough, man. You're down to it at a few positions here. The Astros shifting gears. Oh, by the way, the Texans play on Wednesday. You can hear the game on Sports Radio 610. 3:30 kick, 12:30 Texans countdown with me and Seth. Astros signed Christian Walker, 3 years, $60 million. For anybody who felt like the Astros were headed into a rebuild mode, this would certainly send the this lines up with the message that Dana Brown has been giving us all season long, which is that they still believe that they're a contender in the American League. 3 years, $60 million for Christian Walker is a good sign. You know what? I know it's a good signing. Yankee fans were pissed about this.
Yeah, Yankees fans.
Yankee fans were like, Christian Walker, 3 years, $60 million? That's all it took? Yeah. That's all it took to get Christian Walker? Because I guess they've got
a
first
base. Did they call Christian Walker a greedy bastard taking money?
Not the one that I saw, okay. Not the videos I saw. But this is good. Gold Glove first baseman, 30 home run guy. And you cited this earlier. They seem to be targeting guys... who, at least in the 81 games they play at Minute Maid Park, their swings are tailor-made for that part of the season, for the home games.
Yeah.
Christian Walker's one of those guys.
I pulled up the wrong depth chart for the Astros. I'm trying to remember what year this would have been from.
What is it?
Never mind. It's screwed up. Move the Crawford boxes in.
Even closer. Closer.
Have some bleachers in front there.
I think they are one... good outfield signing away from being a better team this coming season than they were last season.
Mm-hmm.
I think Paredes is a good third baseman. He was an all-star. Yeah. He was an all-star last year.
Yeah, well, look,
Walker's a major upgrade at first base.
The strategy of not signing guys to long-term deals, basically the one sentimental signing is already on the team that Altuve is going to be here. He'll be an Astro for life.
He can still play at least. Too,
right. You know? I feel like for the most part, I don't feel awesome because an entire outfield is not a minor issue, but the offense that they've potentially added and some stability at first base, especially to where, let's remember, it wasn't just Jose Abreu's production. It was just the entire first base situation was such a drain on the lineup, like how you had to construct the lineup, just how many innings were killed just because it was a non-compete out of your first baseman, whoever it was. And then defensively, it just, you know, it just was not good. So, yeah, I feel a lot better about this.
It can't be, though, that outfield is the new first base. You know what I mean? It can't be that your outfield for a majority of the games is some combination of Dubon, Myers, and Chaz McCormick. You got to make one more move, I think, to feel good that you've actually improved the baseball team this offseason. If you lose Kyle Tucker and Alex Bregman, and you feel like you go into next season feeling more optimism about the team, that's a good offseason for Dana Brown. And I think if they go get, you know, Teoscar Hernandez's name is getting thrown around, Santander from the Orioles, his name's getting tossed about. We'll see. I don't know where we're at relative to Jim Crane's threshold for spending in free agency.
I think the thing I have to keep reminding myself was that, hey, injuries are going to happen, but last year was freakishly bad for the pitchers. Yeah. And then just even Hunter Brown getting off to a slow start. Hunter didn't, but everybody else getting off to the slow start.
No, Hunter did.
Yes. That was an atrocious start.
Yeah. Rennell Blanco's who
Blanco's who
of.
I'm thinking of. Yeah, yeah, Blanco's the only guy that was steady.
He's good.
So that look, this is a team, and like with the signing of Wisniewski, yeah, it's... Like, with the Texans right now, all my hopes for them making any kind of a postseason run are, okay, they've got to play out of their minds on defense. If they're going to win this Ravens game, they got to turn the ball over 4 or 5 times. So, likewise with the Astros, you can't have the same pitching injuries you had last year. And then this goes back to being, on paper, a hell of a pitching rotation.
Well, they ain't trading Fromber, I can tell you that now. Christian Walker signing is a sign they're keeping Fromber.
The fact that I know they've had conversations, they'll listen to talks about anybody, but the way Dana Brown is operating, it feels very much like, yeah, we've got some issues, we've got some holes in the outfield, but our pitching, we expect to carry this team for much of the season.
I think the Tucker thing was a unique situation in so much as you had a willing team in the Cubs that actually had guys that could help you win this year.
Yeah.
In Paredes and Wisniewski. So there's that. Christian Walker is an Astro. Real quick, Rockets win last night in Toronto. This was a game that they trailed big early in this game. Came back, a little back and forth in the second half. Rockets put a run on them at the end of the game to win 114-110. College football playoff, all blowouts in the first round. The spectacle of the college football playoff was fantastic with the home stadiums.
Yeah.
That was cool. The games were all blowouts. The closest game was Notre Dame-Indiana, 27-17. Indiana needed to score 2 touchdowns in the last 5 minutes just to make it look closer than it was. The games were all blowouts. The games were boring, but the spectacle was great. So we'll see.
If it were to go this, how many years?
The committee's getting killed right now.
How many years would it have to go like this before they made another change?
I think they're going to entertain serious changes this time around in terms of how they do the seeding and whatnot. I think this was viewed as sort of a petri dish kind of year for
I mean, the situation Oregon is in now where it's almost became a bad thing to be the one seed. They got to figure that out.
Yeah. I mean, it's an easy fix. It's just, will they do it this year? So we'll see. I think the whole thing of the 4 conference champions getting automatic buys, pushing teams like Boise State and ASU into the top 4, 2 teams that clearly aren't even close to the top 4, in my opinion, that's the issue. So we'll talk about that a little more as the week rolls on. Games are on New Year's Eve and New Year's Day, the quarterfinals, all played in bowl games. So that was fun. College football playoff action this past weekend. Oh, by the way, Ricky Henderson passing away. We'll acknowledge Ricky Henderson and acknowledge me at 7:20 today. Let's circle back to the Texans and the Chiefs, and let's relive some of what happened on Saturday. This will help us maybe diagnose some of the things that are wrong with this team right now and some of the things that are right with this team right now. We'll do it through the voice of Mark Vandermeer. We'll do it through the plays that happened and mattered on Saturday. That's coming up next.